Hello and welcome to episode 68 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. My name is Francisco Gonzalez and I am a wreck. And with me as always...
Hello, I am Ben Turner and I feel great.
Actually,
delicious.
I say I'm a wreck, but I actually feel surprisingly more chipper than I usually do after GDC, which is kind of strange considering I was there the whole week. But I don't know. Maybe I paced myself or something. Who knows? Who can say? But anyway, how are you, Ben Chandler?
I'm very well, thank you, Francisco Gonzalez. I just said just before that I feel great, so I'm only going to be able to reiterate that, I guess. Totally contradict myself.
That's fine. I was more asking along the lines of what have you been up to? I haven't talked to you very much this past week. What sorts of stuff mischief have you been doing?
We've been emailing each other, Francisco.
Oh, I know, but we've been doing, you know, work stuff. What about your life, your social life? You went to the opera, didn't you?
I did. I took my grandmother to see The Barber of Seville, and I enjoyed that. Weird, because I didn't expect that I'd ever be an opera person, but I enjoyed it. So, you know, I think, like, as I was saying to you before, like, if I went and saw, like, Wagner mm-hmm. or something like that, I'd just be like, what is this? But, I mean, I'm not going to judge something before I've done it, so...
I know that you wore a tie and a vest, and you looked very, very well-coiffed and handsome, but did you wear a top hat and monocle?
No, I thought, honestly, if I wore... I don't have a monocle because my vision is 20/20, and I thought if I wore a top hat, then the people sitting behind me just, you know...
Well, you remove your hat during the performance. You don't want to be a jerk.
Well, I have to remove my... hat to get in the car, to fit in the car, so what's the point of having the hat?
Cut a hole
for like the 12 seconds between going from like your car into the theater.
Cut a hole in the roof of your car so your top hat sticks out of it.
That seems like a reasonable approach to that issue.
Or
it seems a reasonable response to that dilemma.
Or go in a carriage. Oh. That would be even better so that you have a high ceiling.
Or I could buy a convertible.
That too.
But then I think my hat would blow off. To be honest. I'd need a hat with a chin strap, which would ruin the point. I think it's best if we just leave the hat at home.
Okay, good idea. What about those little opera glasses, binocular things on a stick?
No, I've always wanted a pair of those.
Yeah, me too.
But, like, not to do that with, but to just, like, walk around the supermarket and be like, oh, the pineapples are in. Let me check the price.
From across the hall.
Because I'm a parody of a human being.
Well, so am I, so... That's why people love our podcast. So what have you been playing game wise? You've been busy.
Well, after finishing The Secret of Monkey Island,
yes,
a great classic adventure, I thought, why don't I play something that I haven't played? You know.
Yes.
And I decided to play Torrent's Passage.
Oh.
And I found it
really?
Sucks.
Well,
I mean, it's not a good game.
That was
I'm sorry. And it's weird because...
And honest, the review
it's really
ever...
weird because... sorry?
I was... That's as succinct and honest a review as anyone could ever hope to get.
Well, it's weird for me because people... I'd always thought of Torrent's Passage as this kind of, like, classic... Like, not this, like, cult game that, like, a lot of people, like, love. Like, the people that played it love, but everyone else who played it, and you'd even sort of like spoken highly of it, but once I started playing and you were watching me, you were like, oh man, I've forgotten how much this game sucks, and it really sucks. It's a bad game.
Well, here's the thing, and it led to some interesting discussion in, the fact is that I last played Torrent's Passage when I was about 13 or 14, and back then, you know, I was happy to play any adventure game, but looking at it now from an objective point of view and as a designer, it really is a poorly designed game, and it's true. And also, we talked about the discussion of the in-game hint system and how the puzzles were kind of designed to rely on the player using that, because otherwise...
Yeah, I think the game got a pass because of that. Like, people that... Because I didn't use the hint system because I'm not interested in that. I like solving puzzles.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that people just use the hint system like, oh, that's how you get past that bit, rather than sitting down, playing through the puzzles and being like, you know, this is fucking terrible, as I was. I was like, I was cross at the very, 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 very start with that annoying little worm. So, like, it wasn't a good start. And, like, to find that the solution of that, I'd clicked on him twice, I didn't realize, like, and so I just went back and I was just, like, rage clicking by that point. And, like, you know, it get, you're just like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's got some real stinkers in there. But
the weird thing is, the one puzzle that you thought I'd get stuck on was my favorite puzzle. I thought it was fantastic, creative, unique, and very cool. I've only seen that done
One other time. I wonder if you would have enjoyed it if you hadn't had the subtitles on, because I played without subtitles on, and that's why it was difficult for me.
Okay. Yeah, I always play with subtitles on, just in case, like, some music comes in while people are talking. You never know, it's happened to me before. Especially because I play, like, games often with, like, somebody on Skype watching or listening while I play along. So, like, if they're talking, I can't hear what's being said. And in an adventure game, you really need to hear what's being said.
Absolutely, yes.
You know. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed that puzzle. And, yeah, that was really fun. But the rest of the game, like, the art is...
It's
all
pretty,
over the place.
Yeah,
the music is terrible. Like, the music really is really, really, really bad.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's very much very... It sounds like someone did it on a crappy, like, wavetable synth thing that just...
It's weird because, like... Because it's very rare that I dislike the music in a game. It's really, really, really rare. But I honestly dislike the music in Time's Passage.
It's really just not memorable at all. And it's... I don't know. It's kind of just very hokey and dumb.
Yeah, well, it's like the whole game set. I think Richard Goodness summed it up best when it's a game that is both trying too hard and also feels like it's quite lazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if lazy is the right word, because a lot of work got put into it, clearly, but for what?
Yeah.
And I hate all of the characters, including the little purple cat thing that sucks.
Boogle.
Yeah.
What I was telling you, one of the travesties, I think, was the fact that Sierra in their high-res games did all those, like, really stupid MS Paint-looking sprites, but the animation in Torrent's Passage in the making-of little featurette thing that comes on the CD, you can see that they actually did it on paper, like traditional hand animation flipbook on paper.
But
and then somehow...
What other technology was there to convert it to... sort of a
game.
Well,
I mean, they could have just done it straight on the computer, but the fact that they scanned it in and went, it had it go from, like, because I mean, look at the Curse of Monkey Island, that is also scanned and painted on the computer, and the animation is like 10 billion times better than Torrent's Passage or any other Sierra game for that matter of that style.
I don't know.
Anyway,
I think it's hard to know.
Yeah, it is hard to know.
But yeah, so Torrent's Passage is not unfairly forgotten classic. I'll say it right now. I was actually really disappointed because I had high hopes for the games, and I'm usually really forgiving of games. But Torrent's Passage, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm not a kid, and you have to be, and it's designed as a kid's game. But I thought the jokes were not funny at all. I thought the characters were all boring and horrible and just not good. I hate Torrent. Like, he's not a good character. I do not like him at all. That stupid grass puzzle is, like, the dumbest thing I've ever seen ever in a game. I think, like, everybody warned me about the grass puzzle. I'm like, oh, I've solved shit puzzles before, I'll get through it. And then I just got there, I'm like, are you fucking... And then there's dumb puzzles with, like, stupid little people standing in stupid little platforms that have to be arranged in stupid little ways. I mean, I played Torrent's Passage. and I also, like, and the worst thing was, is, like, I played it wedged between The Secret of Monkey Island and Sam and Max Hit the Road, which are two of my most favorite adventure games in the entire world.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm basically, like, eating, you know, nice ice cream, then a plate of steaming shit, and then some nice apple pie. It's basically the experience that I got there.
That's a terrible meal. I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. No, that's right. But, I mean, play Sam and Max and Secret of Monkey Island, obviously. Yeah. Both of which, I think, personally, still hold up very well.
No, absolutely. Absolutely, they do.
And I realize the puzzles in Sam and Max Hit the Road are a bit weird and wacky. I do not care.
Yeah, at least they sort of make logical sense in some ways.
Yeah, they do. There's always hints for all of them. Whereas in Torrent's Passage, nothing tells you that you have to click on the stupid fucking worm 3 times. So... Yeah, there's that. And it's not just that, it's that the worm runs away from your mouse cursor.
Yeah.
He does not want to be clicked. You have to really fight to click on him.
Yeah.
But, so I also played a lot of Warlords Battlecry 3. That is is a bad game. Do not buy it if you will get severely addicted to it. It is a bad game. Bad game. And not in the I'm not enjoying this sense. It's the in the I'm enjoying this too much, and my friends and family have no idea who I am anymore. They haven't heard or seen from me. They're thinking about staging an intervention. Warlords Battlecry 3, great game, bad game, don't play it.
Wow.
I also played The Dark Eye, Chains of Satanav.
Oh, really?
Which, like a lot of Daedalic Adventures, has amazing background art. Like, the most amazing, like, the heartbreakingly beautiful. Like, just like, as an artist, you just want to give up. And then and then decent music and kind of lackluster writing and puzzles and everything else.
You think it's lackluster writing or is it bad translation?
I think it's both. Like, the voice acting was, like, all over the place. Like, you get to, like, the very end part of the game where it's all, like, dark and gloomy and that, and it's, like, he still has his, like, when you leave a conversation, he's, like, had all serious conversations and stuff like that, and then you, like, you go to leave the conversation, and he still uses his start of the game, I'll be back in a minute, sort of, like, cheerful, like, just, like,
What kind of a goodbye is that?
Well,
it's not even a goodbye, it's just a sort of a... Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's an adventure game. And you're going to come back and ask them more annoying questions in a minute. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I guess. So.
But, like, the first half of the game has puzzles that are just kind of, oh, I guess we'll just go along with this. And the second half of the game is just puzzles that are mostly very silly. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed playing through it, but I really wish that Daedalic would put as much, like, I don't know, I wish they had as many writers as artists or something. I don't know what it is, but all of their games look really, 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 really nice, but they're always missing something in the writing and design department, I think.
Oh.
I'm yet to play, like, Night of the Rabbit or anything like that, so we'll see. But it's funny because Edna and Harvey the Breakout, which has, like, the worst, the graphics of a Daedalic game, has, like, the best writing, in my opinion, and the best design, even though it's crazy, like, it's a crazy game. But that kind of suits, because you're playing somebody in Asylum. So, you know. But anyway, so I played that. If you like beautiful background art, like, you need to play that just to, like, have your jaw drop constantly at the color choices and the composition and stuff. But the rest of the time, I don't. Like, I wish they'd do something. I don't know. I don't know what it is. And it's hard to know.
If you hate beautiful background art, play Torrent's Passage.
Yeah, that's very true.
Wah.
And I also played for the very first time, and this was given to me by my birthday by our good friend Chris Lapine.
Oh, yes.
And good, like, Chris. It's been sitting down, I've been looking at it. And,
listen to the Square Waves FM podcast.
Yeah, do it. Conquest of Camelot, which is a Sierra game that very few people talk about when, in the midst of the Space Quests, Quests, and Police Quests. And the Kong, and the, what's the other one?
Conquest.
Leisure Suit Larry Quests.
Yeah, yeah. Leisure Suit Larry, yeah. I have something to sort of talk to you about with regards to Conquests of Camelot. You mentioned to me...
Well, this is a podcast. We should talk about it.
Yeah, we should. You mentioned to me, I believe on this very podcast, that you...
Hi.
That you always had an embarrassing typo happen when you typed out Conquest of Camelot, and that you wrote Conquest of Camel Toe. And I saw
that happens to me all the time.
Yeah. And I saw you tweet it the other day, and you typed it C A M E L T O. Now that does not spell camel toe. That spells camel two. I thought you were, like, spelling it with the E at the end, but you're not.
Oh Jesus Christ! No, I'm not that bad at spelling. I just mix two letters up. I don't accidentally add a whole E in for a whole new level of embarrassment. Jesus.
Well, I mean, come on.
I'm sorry that I don't spell camel toe accurately when I misspell Camelot.
Well, okay, good. Don't let it happen again. I expect to see that E at the end when you do it. Anyway, how did you like Conquest of Camelot?
It's weird for me because the jousting section was really hard and took me ages to figure out. Mm-hmm. The walking on the ice bit was just, like, it was just kind of like an exercise in, like, going a little bit at a time and, like, saving and, like, you know, being careful and, you know.
Yeah, but you had the heart to guide you.
I did have the heart, of course, yeah. But it was still tough. The bit where you're being chased around by the three mad monks was, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, that was
The spearing the boars felt kind of badly balanced.
Mm.
The fight at the very end, the big sword fight, was difficult and like took me like I don't know how many tries it took
That's
me to
on
get
the
that.
Box
like
cover.
Not that many tries, but because you get worn out, it gets slow.
Yeah.
And like there's a bunch of stuff, and like the desert section, I walked around that desert for so long before I was like, okay, I'm gonna load my save game and see where this water's coming from.
Yeah.
Like, like, so like all of that stuff aside, I really, really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fantastic game, and it reminded me of Gold Rush in a couple of ways. Like, it doesn't try to be an adventure game with like using items on stuff. It tries to be an adventure story where you're actually like, you know, you start off like going around like your home area, and then you venture out and you go to this like adventure. You go from where you belong to this adventure. You choose the adventure, and like every step of the way is like part of a big quest. You know, there's no pauses. It doesn't catch its breath at any point. It really feels like one of the old legendary tales, but you can play it this time, and I adore that.
Did you get the Easter egg at the beginning?
Which one? Where you get turned into a dog? I got turned into a dog.
Oh, Merlin turns you into a dog if you bother him
yeah.
too much? No.
Or is this the thing with the coins where the three guards appear?
I'm talking about the latter, yes. The Monty Python
no,
Easter egg.
How on earth would I have gotten that Easter egg?
I don't know, because...
How would I have guessed that,
what?
Francisco?
Do you know how to get it?
Yeah, I looked it up. I was reading about the game after I played it.
Oh, okay.
But how was I going to guess to type that in, honestly?
Well, if I thought maybe you had read about the game beforehand.
I don't read... You know I don't read about games
before I play them.
You know I play them and then I research them, because that way I don't spoil the puzzles for myself.
Yes, good.
But yeah. But some of those riddles were tough, man. Like, one of them,
yeah,
I had to, like, save my game, go away, and, like, think on it for an hour while I did other things.
That's
and
a
I was
good
like,
adventure game puzzle,
like,
I think.
Oh, I get that. Yeah, that's how I like to play adventure games. Like, you can go away and think about it and, like, come back. But yeah, so some
exactly.
of those, like, the four of the riddles I got straight away. I've read afterwards that the riddles are random, so it's random chance, like,
that's right, yeah.
what you get.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a bunch of copy protection, which you have to have your manual by your side in order to solve. But yeah,
you think there's
I
a
would
bunch
say
of copy
that...
protection in Conquest of Camelot? Wait until you play Conquest of the Longbow. That's a lot of copy protection.
Well,
there's at
yeah,
least
I know, but still.
There's at least five puzzles that require the copy protection in Longbow. Just warning
I'm sure,
you.
But, you know, yeah, but I'm still saying that three times is a lot of coverage protection.
Yeah.
But I mean, I honestly feel you could have gotten your way through that with a pencil and paper if you're patient enough, even if you'd parted the game.
Maybe.
I honestly do.
You wouldn't have been
you
able to do the, you wouldn't be able to have done the, yeah, I guess you could have if you just randomly guessed the flowers. But whatever.
Yeah, because they tell you when you're wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
So you just keep trying it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like the things where you have to type in a specific number.
Yeah.
It's like, you pick from like seven options. So how easy is that? But one thing I really liked about the game is like, it's kind of like, it's cute. Like, it's cute a lot of the times. Like, I like when you get the Holy Grail at the very end and like the naughty little thief grabs it and runs off. I was like, hee hee. And I like, you know, the maze where you're like, there's the poison, the venomous rats and like,
Oh man, yeah, the catacombs thing. Yeah.
And you get bitten and you give
bit,
your
yeah.
you give your
and there's a ghoul
elixir
in the coffin.
To Sir Galahad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the ghoul has the thing with the medallion and all
that stuff,
which you can tell because it's got the symbol on the top of the sarcophagus.
And it makes that
what I really like about that
noise.
Is when you what's that, sorry?
There's that horrible screeching noise when the coffin opens up.
That goes for so long.
Yeah, it's scary. I peed my pants.
It is. That's actually, like, I was genuinely, like, tense doing that bit. It was awesome.
Yeah, good. Anyway.
But what I really like about that is, like, the Aphrodite tells you the directions that you have to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you write them down.
That's where you use the lodestone, right?
Use the lodestone. So you follow them, and you get to the very end, and the very last time... And the doorway to the entrance that you came in is open, but it's to the south and you have to go north.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at it, I'm like, this game is trying to trick me But, like, so I went to the north, which defies all logic because you're going back into the middle of the thing and that's how you exit the thing. I was like, how clever is that? They tricked you. Mm-hmm. Like, they're trying to mislead you. I like that.
Good.
But, so Conquest of Camelot is a really good game. And it's, like, some of the arcadey bits are really frustrating, but I was easily able to forgive it because it felt fair most of the time, you know? It always felt like it was fair, like I always had a chance, where it's not like some of the stuff where you're like, oh, you ate the custard pie, now you can't kill the Yeti, which doesn't feel fair to me, or the leisure suit with the fucking brochure on the plane and all that shit. It always felt fair to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, good game.
Good. Good. Is that mostly what you've been playing, then?
I think that's everything I've been playing. Is it? I don't even know, dude. I'm sorry.
It's fine. For all intents and purposes, it might as well be. I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, anyway, I started playing The Last of Us, and,
Oh, yeah. I was meant to, but I'm an idiot, so I didn't.
I told you to, but you still have time. I'm probably not going to play it anymore this weekend because I'm tired, and I'm probably going to spend most of this weekend recovering and catching up on stuff that I missed during the week. But, yeah, it's an interesting game. It's definitely a departure from the Uncharted games that Naughty Dog is known for. And I don't want
to... Good!
Jesus Christ. I don't want to spoil it too much because you obviously want to have the experience as well, but I really like the way that it sets up the world, and I really like the way that it's grounded in realism. Because, I mean, you have Nathan Drake, who's supposed to be like an everyman kind of guy, but he runs around, and he jumps around, and he climbs like a monkey, and he does these insane leaps.
He kills 6 million people.
Yeah, and he kills 6 million people, and he's always finding ammo. This game is not like that. This game... You play as a 50-something-year-old man who is a 50-something-year-old man. He's not...
Is he 50? He doesn't look like he's 50 from, like, the promo.
He's pretty old and grizzled. I mean, the prologue takes place in 2013, and the main game takes place 20 years later. So there's a 20-year gap there. So I'm assuming he's in his 50s, because he doesn't look like he's in his 20s when you start... in the prologue. Anyway, but he doesn't run around. There's no jump button. You can't like just randomly jump. You can climb on things if you approach them, but you know, it's like you have to, he doesn't do like giant leaps. He has to find like ladders and planks and stuff to cross gaps and things like that. So that's pretty cool. And of course, it actually focuses a lot more on stealth, because mm-hmm. ammo is limited, so you can't you know, if you run out of ammo, you're screwed. And it's really interesting.
Well, I mean, in Uncharted, if you run out of ammo, you can literally run at a crowd of people toting assault rifles and punch them all to death.
Yeah, you can run up and punch people here, but they'll kill you, and the zombies will like, there's some zombies, the clickers, if they grab you, you're dead. It's one shot, one hit kill with them. But yeah. Anyway, there's also an interesting element of crafting, which is kind of weird, but I've enjoyed it.
I have never really gotten into crafting in a game, despite all of the role-playing games I've played.
Yeah, neither. But whatever. So, anyway.
I'm sure there's people out there who love it.
Yeah, so that's pretty much all I've been playing.
I love it when it's like a minimal thing that gets you special stuff.
Yeah.
Not if it's like if you're like, oh, get the three things and you'll get the magic sword that's better than the other swords. You're like, give me those three things, I'll find them.
No,
but if it's like, oh, you can make a slight stamina increase for 20 seconds potion if you go and fix these 14 ingredients. I'm like, no, I'll just hit the people with my sword. Jeez.
No, this is like you pick up materials to craft like shivs and Molotov cocktails and stuff like that.
Oh, that sounds like Rage. That was like a not needed element in Rage, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it might be a not needed element in this game, but whatever. Mm. So yeah, I played a couple of hours of that, and then I flew off to GDC where I've been for the past week, and I just got back from like 4 hours ago, so...
Hello.
Hi. So I'm going to talk...
Oh, wait, we already had that bit. We already had the hello
bit. Yeah, I know. So I'm gonna talk about GDC a little bit, because a lot of interesting stuff happened this week. Not just in general, but to me personally. And I would like to talk about it with you and our lovely audience. So, if you recall, last year we did this exact same episode where I got off the plane and went, "Ugh, I'm tired, let me tell you about GDC." Because I'm an old smoker, apparently.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But this time around was interesting because this was my fourth GDC, but it was the first time I went for the whole week, and it was the first time I went with more than just the Expo Pass. I went with the Summits and Tutorials Boot Camp Pass. So the narrative summit was what I focused on Monday and Tuesday, even though I didn't attend all that many sessions, but it was still interesting. It was still interesting because I got to see aspects of GDC I had never really experienced before. I also did a lot of press interviews with Dave, and there were some travel snafus at the beginning. Dave was meant to fly out of here on Sunday and arrive on Sunday evening, but there was a big snowstorm on Sunday, and his flight got delayed and then canceled while they were on the runway after 4 hours. So he got stuck, and he couldn't get another flight until the following day. And originally, he was supposed to get a flight that left New York at like 7 p.m. and got to San Francisco at like midnight their Pacific time. But he was able to find a spot on an earlier flight, and he arrived in San Francisco at 7 p.m. San Francisco time. So he was at least able to come to the adventure dinner party on Monday, which was good. But he missed the whole first day of the summits, and he missed a lot of the interviews, and we had to reschedule, and it was a big mess. But anyway, I had travel problems too, because my plane had a lot of... apparently, they flew upwards and into strong headwinds, and as a result, they burned a lot of fuel, so we had to land in Salt Lake City and refuel the plane. And I spoke with a bunch of other people that came from New York, and like two other flights had the same problem, but they had stopped in different places. So I don't know what's up with that. They need to put fuel in the planes.
Maybe Chris Olsen could share some insight.
Yeah, maybe he could. Yeah, tell us, Chris Olsen. Why is it... How much fuel do headwinds usually burn? I mean, I imagine that if headwinds are pushing against the plane pretty strongly, you're going to burn through your fuel pretty quickly. But
yeah.
I wonder if there's like a certain amount of fuel. Actually, you probably calculated on that Bingo Fuel app that Chris
I was
Olsen
just going to say, Chris Olsen's actually developed an app for iOS you can actually do fuel calculations. So everybody who's a pilot that's
right
listening
now.
Right now, and I know you all listen to the podcast, go out, check that out, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure Chris Olsen can provide us with a link that we can share with our listeners. Because we know that the pilots of Air Forces all listen to our podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Air Forces. They're not Air Forces. They're airlines. What am I talking about?
Air Forces. They might as well be.
You didn't go in like the big Hercules plane and parachute out like a paratrooper, did you?
No, I'm pretty sure it was a 737, but I might be wrong. I think it might have been an Airbus or something, an Airbus A800 or something. I don't know. Anyway.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. So the first day of GDC...
Aren't they A380s, not A300s?
They might be. I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention.
I don't think they have quite that many numbers, but I might be wrong.
I don't know. I honestly didn't pay attention. I was just...
Chris Olsen is going to be listening to this and just be going, "Oh my god, what are these two buffoons?"
Well, here's the thing, too. I inadvertently sat us in the row in front of the exit row where the seats don't recline, so it was really uncomfortable.
Well done, Francisco. Great work.
I didn't know. And on top of that, it's a six-hour flight, but they don't feed you. You have to pay for food. I paid $7 for a fucking hearty meal pack, which was literally a box full of three crackers, a little... thing of melted cheese that tasted of white cheddar that tasted like melted Laughing Cow cheese, like 10 little tiny circles of salami. It was like an adult Lunchable. And then they had Welch's fruit snacks for dessert, as well as a bag of pretzels and a bag of roasted chickpeas. And that was it. It was $7 for that shit. And after half an hour, I was hungry again, and then I got grumpy. And then I was like, "I want food, and I want cheese." You know, it was bad. But anyway.
Imagine if you'd spend that $7 on, like, a Golden Wake or something.
I know. So much more worthwhile if you spent that money on a Golden Wake. A fascinating adventure into the 1920s of real estate, etc., etc., etc.
And now, back to our regularly scheduled program.
What a yeah, man, you're really good at being a corporate shill. You really should do it more often. Anyway.
Thank you. I do every day.
Oh, no. Anyway. So, anyway, I got to GDC, and the first day was cool. I had an interview with somebody.
The first day was cool. That's literally the best review of GDC I've ever heard.
Yeah, right. No, I went to a talk by Christy Marks.
Oh, nice. I just played a game.
Oh, wait, no, I'm wrong. Christy Marks' talk was on Tuesday. I didn't go to any talks on Monday, did I? No, yes, I did.
I don't know. You were the one that went to GDC.
I don't remember what I did, okay? No, I went to
Dude,
a talk.
You don't remember anything. We all know this.
No, you know what it is? It's because it all blurs together. I don't remember what happened on what day. No, Christy Marks was on Tuesday. Now I remember. Monday was, I went to a talk about design, something about design that was
design given... of games.
No, it was something about narrative design versus like design. I don't remember. The talk wasn't really that.
Clearly, it was a very memorable.
No, it
speech.
Wasn't. It wasn't. It wasn't. But it was done by Yuri, Yuri something or other.
Yuri Gagarin. Yuri Geller.
Yeah. Yuri Geller. No, J U R I E.
Yuri Geller was the guy that bent spoons.
I know who Yuri Geller is. He bent spoons, and then James Randi told him that he was a fraud, and he was like, no, you don't understand, I am Yuri Geller. Because apparently he was Roberta Williams' manservant.
Paco.
Oh, I see you've listened to Squarewaves FM.
Dude, we've been doing Paco jokes for fucking years.
I didn't realize his name was Paco between you and I. I thought I had just been clever and made that up on the thing.
We've always called him Paco because of Paco from Jagged Alliance 2, which you haven't played.
Oh, right. Okay.
But he's the little racist stereotype that's like, Mommy says sure. Never talk to strangers.
Yeah. Sure.
That's like, everyone should play Jagged Alliance 2.
Anyway, his name is Tom... No, is it Thomas Jury? I don't even know. It's Jury... Oh, here we go. Jury on Games. Jury Horniman. There we go. Jury Horniman.
Sorry. Sorry, Yuri, for
he's Dutch.
That mix up with Yuri Geller.
Yes, Yuri...
And Yuri Gagarin.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, he spells his name J-U-R-I-E, and at the end of his...
He spells his name, or that's how his name is spelled?
That's how his name is spelled. It's his name...
Because it made it sound like that. That was his fanciful way of spelling it, and
no.
That was actually spelled like Z Y.
No, look, I'm tired. Okay, leave me alone. Jesus Christ, talking to you is like talking to a fucking I don't know what. Anyway,
how appropriate
you fight like a cow. Anyway, his name is spelled J-U-R-I-E, and in one of his last slides, he put something like "the jury is out." Yes, because he was leaving, so he put "the jury is out." And everyone was like, what a terrible pun. And then I looked on Twitter and I saw that that pun was suggested by none other than... You're supposed to guess here.
Was it Richard Cobbett?
It was Richard Cobbett!
That was a really easy thing to guess. Like, that was... That's the easiest thing I've ever guessed. That's, like, easier than any adventure game puzzle I've ever come across.
Good. So yeah, that was kind of funny. Then I saw another interesting talk about comedy in games and why it's really difficult to do well, given by Zoe Quinn. And But I had to leave that one early because I had an interview at 5 and that talk was from 4:30 to 5. But I caught most of it and it was pretty interesting. So yeah, that was pretty much my Monday. Except something else happened on Monday, didn't it? Monday... No, I don't remember. Monday wasn't really that memorable as far as, like, stuff happening. But then Tuesday there were a couple of... Amidst the interviews, there were a couple of talks that I wanted to see. One of them being by Christy Marks in the morning, who, yes, Christy Marks...
I've played her game.
You did play her game. She gave a talk about... She works for Zynga now, actually.
Did I tell you that every time I see her name, hear her name, I, like, get this mental image of a cross between Christa Berg and Richard Marks? Every single time.
No, you didn't tell me that. Who's Christa Berg?
He did, like, Lady in Red, and, like, he's, like, this singer guy with enormous eyebrows that does, like, horrible music. But, like, when I was a kid, he had, like, some song about, like, drugs or, like, don't pay the ferryman, and, like, the song used to terrify me when I was a kid, and I have no idea. Maybe it was the eyebrows.
Okay.
So yeah, and fair. Richard Marx is Richard Marx.
Oh, so I was thinking it would be Karl Marx, but
no, because I've got way more exposure to like '80s, like shit '80s music.
Yeah.
Than I do to like any like anything of importance or relevance to history.
I guess that's fair. I don't really know who Richard Marx is, to be honest.
Don't bother. Don't bother finding out. I promise you.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. So Christy Marx works for Zynga now, and she was,
yeah. Edmundo was saying.
Yeah. She pretty much was giving a postmortem about her mobile game Castleville, which I mean the topic of the talk wasn't really that relevant to my interests, but I did learn a couple of interesting things. Actually, she was talking about how like mobile games, especially, they emphasize repetition a lot. And I know Dave was talking about this the other day on Twitter or something, where he's been playing through Phoenix Wright, and he noticed how they keep giving you the same information over and over and over again. And that's because with mobile games, they expect the player to play them in little bits and pieces, and not necessarily be in an environment where they can concentrate fully. Like, they might be on a bus commuting or a train or whatever. So, yeah, they focus on repetition to drive the points home. Because if you come and pick up the game after not playing it for a while, you're not necessarily going to remember every single detail. But if you
that's kind of weird, though, because that is how I play adventure games. Like, I play a bit, and then when I get stuck, I walk away and I think about it. So, like, yeah. I mean, I understand the point, but I literally play adventure games. Like, I don't know how many, like, Torrens Passage, it was, like, over the course of, like, a few days that I finished that, and Conquest of Camelot was not a few days, but, like, a few play sessions where I stopped playing, went away, came back with, like, a fresh mind. So, that's really how I play.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, that was interesting. And then I found out later on that Peter McConnell was giving a talk about learning from old music in games as far as, like, composing new stuff or doing new stuff. It was for the Music Summit track, which I'm not a musician, but I like Peter McConnell's work. As you know, Peter McConnell did...
We all do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all like Peter
McConnell.
If you've been
living under a rock, Peter McConnell composed music for pretty much every LucasArts adventure game in some point. I mean, he collaborated with Michael Land and a couple of other people on Monkey Island 2, but he did Sam & Max, he did Day of the Tentacle, he did Grim Fandango,
Full Throttle.
He did Full Throttle, he did Psychonauts, he's done a bunch of other stuff too. I think he did Hearthstone, actually. But he's most well known for his LucasArts stuff. So of course, I wasn't going to give up the chance to go watch Peter McConnell talk. So Peter McConnell is really, really good at talking. Like, he makes his talks interesting. Someone told me, and it's good advice, when you go to GDC, don't go to the talks for the subjects, go for the speaker. Because if you go for the subject, more often than not, you might be disappointed, because, let's be honest, most of the talks are pretty useless. But just to hear the people
speak... How so are they useless?
Well...
Because, I mean, people pay big money and, like, lots of travel expenses and shit to attend this, so I assume there's something there.
There can be, but, see, this is kind of a point that we were discussing as well one night at a bar about how GDC itself is kind of useless. And, I mean, yeah, people do pay big money. I think GDC is very good if you're trying to break into the industry and if you're, you know, you want to learn and pick up stuff here and there. I'm not saying that the talks aren't, maybe useless is a bit of a harsh word. They're not completely useless, but I mean, if you're in game design, if you are working in the industry, 9 times out of 10, the stuff that they're talking about is stuff you already know. I mean,
a lot of the times when I see, like, the topics come up, I'm like, this is stuff that I could talk to about a lot of different people on Twitter or on a forum or via email and get the same sort of information about, you know? So I kind of wonder, like, it's a lot of expense, especially for some people to travel to GDC. Why?
It is.
Other than talking to people that you like, or, like, have a similar interest.
That's pretty much what it is. But, I mean, if you consider most of, like, the big people that go to show stuff or speak or whatever, get all their stuff covered by either their company or by whatever, you know, people aren't people are not, the majority of people in the industry are not paying out of their own pocket to go to GDC. So it's mostly the, you know, the lay people that are paying the big money. But anyway, yeah, so Peter McConnell gave his talk, and it was cool. And I got the opportunity to hang out afterwards and talk to him a little bit, which was really great. He's a really nice guy. I basically told him thank you for all his work, and that Grim Fandango was probably one of my favorite scores in video games. And I told him a little anecdote about how I was blown away by one of the tracks on the CD, and how I was like, I can't believe this isn't a video game. And he was very gracious and humble, and he was very kind, and so that was really cool. And he let me take a picture with him, which I posted on Twitter. So yeah, that was at that point, I was like, man, this is the highlight of GDC. I don't think it can get any better than this. But little did I know, it was going to get much, much
My
better.
My whole world was about to change.
Sorry, I just got possessed by the demon of the 1980s.
Oh, okay.
That happens sometimes.
That happens to me, too. It's okay.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
And the last
and,
of us.
And the worst, yeah. So, yeah, so then Wednesday was a busy day because Wednesday, of course, was the last day that for a lot of people... specifically for Dave Gilbert before going off to PAX East, because PAX East was scheduled at the same... PAX East was scheduled to start on Friday and go through this weekend, and GDC, of course, is Monday through Friday. So there was a bit
it's
of
It's such
overlap.
A strange thing that they'd have those so close to each other.
Yeah,
to me.
I mean...
But I guess it does make sense if people have traveled from Europe that they don't have to travel back and forth to Europe.
Well, the thing is that these things are scheduled like years in advance. So the fact that it overlapped was coincidence. Because I mean, GDC is usually in mid or late March. It's never been this early in March before in recent memory. And PAX is usually in April. So they did something wrong. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, they'd still be fairly close to each other, I'd imagine.
Yeah, they would be. But anyway, so...
But like I said, it does make sense if someone's flown from the UK or something like that, that they can go, oh, well, I'll do both shows while I'm here, get more press out for my game, etc.
Sure. Oh, and I just remembered, how stupid of me. How could I have forgotten? Monday night was the first of the two adventure-related events, the first one being just a casual dinner at a Thai restaurant. But Ron Gilbert showed up, which was nice, and a few other people that I had met before. Gene Mochi was there. It's always great seeing Gene.
Lovely.
Yes. I actually saw him quite a bit this time around, which was nice. Wayne Sung, who is the QA guy from Phoenix Online, was there. And he was hanging around, too. It was good to see him. And it was funny, because afterwards, we walked over to the Narrative Summit. People were having like a little writer's after party at another place. So we were walking. And, like, just randomly on the street, we ran into Noah Falstein, who, of course, designed Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, as well as Jory Prum, who works for Telltale as the casting director. And he was really...
I've never heard of him, but...
Yeah, he's worked on pretty much every recent Telltale game, and it was really interesting to talk to him.
I haven't played any recent Telltale games.
You really should. You should play The Wolf Among Us, at least. It's really good. But He actually was talking to us about how what a nightmare it was to do The Wolf Among Us, because it was apparently like a really, really long and arduous process to like find the perfect actor. They started casting The Wolf Among Us before the first season of The Walking Dead came out. So you can imagine how long ago that was compared to when The Wolf Among Us actually came out. They had, I believe he said, 5 different actors for Bigby before they settled on Adam Harrington. And before that, they recorded his part fully 3 times. So
it's a lot of recording time. That's a lot of wasted money.
There was a lot of wasted money there. But
yeah, that's incredible.
I don't know if that was an industry secret or if I just, you know, whatever, but it doesn't matter. Anyway... so the dinner was cool. So Wednesday was the actual adventure party happy hour thing at the Mexican place that we had last year. And that was actually really well attended. And there were some people there that I was surprised to see. Ken Allen was there, although I didn't get a chance to say hello to him.
Oh, okay, cool.
He's the, of course, the musician from Sierra who did Space Quest 4 and other things. He was wearing.
He followed me on Twitter the other day. I'm like, I have played no games that you've worked on, so I didn't tell him that. But I was like, I feel terrible.
He was wearing the most amazing shirt with like it was like this black and white bowling looking shirt, but with like tigers, velvet tigers on the back. It was amazing. I should have gone up to
him. If you made video game stuff in the 80s, you'd get away with wearing that shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that simple.
I guess. Unfortunately, Ron Gilbert did not come to that party, nor did Dave Grossman. I didn't get to see... I walked past Dave Grossman, and I walked past Tim Schafer a couple of times, but I didn't say hello to either of them. I showed Ron Gilbert my LeChuck Grog shirt, and he approved, so that was good, at least. I saw Kevin Mentz from Daedalic, who I had met at AdventureX, and it was good to see him. And I saw John Ingold as well, who I also met at AdventureX, and I finally got a chance to play 80 Days at the IGF Pavilion. And 80 Days is really fun. Have you tried it?
I got it for free when it was on sale when it was being given away, but it was either for free or for a dollar or something like that. But I was like, I've got it, but I haven't gotten around to trying it yet. But it sounds amazing.
It really is. Actually, I believe that on this very podcast, several episodes ago, we talked about procedural generation, and we said about how wouldn't it be interesting if there was a procedurally generated adventure game? And 80 Days pretty much fits that bill, so look at that.
Talking about it with someone the other day, with Ilyich, because I brought up the Gene Machine to him, and I was like, oh man, this is cute, you'd really like the aesthetic.
Oh, I saw you got that on CD. That's a pretty good
find. Yeah, I
got
that, and I can get it running, but I cannot get the save games working for some reason.
The same thing happened to me. I have it on a CD, but I didn't acquire it the way you did. So, yes.
Okay. Anyway. Well, I've played it in DOSBox. I'm going to try it in ScumVM, see if that supports it. But from what I've played, it's ridiculous and cute.
There's
a talking cat,
isn't there?
There is a talking cat. Yes, much like this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
What was I saying?
80 Days procedural generation.
Yeah. 80 Days is cool. I saw those guys from AdventureX. But no, back to the adventure party. So, as you know, Gene Mochy, our friend and listener of the podcast, is working on a Kickstarter game called Duke Grabowski.
Yes.
And one of his team members on Duke Grabowski is none other
than Bill Tiller,
yes. And Bill Tiller was at the party, and I got to meet Bill Tiller and talk to him a little bit. And it was really, really great to talk to Bill Tiller, actually, because not only was it cool to talk to him and tell him that I had really enjoyed Curse of Monkey Island and I thought it was very nice, but Bill Tiller is an artist. And Bill Tiller...
No shit.
Bill Tiller is a good artist, and you look at his Curse of Monkey Island stuff and you think, wow, this is really nice, and you know, whatever... And in talking to him, he is just like you and I, in that he said, man, I look at Curse of Monkey Island. He literally said to me, I wish I could go back and redo the Curse of Monkey Island because it looks like shit now. And I'm like, Bill Tiller, you're such an artist.
It's true. That's how artists are, man.
I know. And he was telling me, I was like, I talked to him a little. I was like, man, you guys were like. I've read the articles you've written, and it was really painstaking. I mean, like, you know, you do your sketch and you'd print it out and then ink it and rescan it and then color it and then dither it down. He's like, yeah, it was pretty time consuming. But I mean, I really wish that Lucas had like redone Curse, because I would have loved to have gone back and redo all those backgrounds and not have to be limited to the 256 colors.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really interesting to chat with Bill Tiller. And then I noticed from across the room, because Rizulka, Natalie, was there. She was showing off her game, and some guy in a also really fun, like, orange Hawaiian shirt was talking to her, and she pointed him over to me, and he came over, and he was like, are you Francisco? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, you're one of the organizers of this party. And I said, yes, I kind of am. And he said, well, thank you so much. It's great to meet you. My name's David Fox. And I was like, oh, hi, David Fox. It's very nice to meet you. And then I was like, wait a minute, your name sounds really familiar. Don't I know you from... What do I know you from? And he's like, oh, I used to work at LucasArts. And as it turns out, David Fox is actually the designer of Zack McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders, amongst other things.
There you go. That's, That's one game I've never played.
Yeah, and David Fox is a very, very nice man, as it turns out as well.
I like how you're constantly surprised that human beings are nice. Like, this is like a constant thing with you, like, I met this person, and they were nice! Like, what the hell? Every single person you've met until we started doing this podcast was just horrible.
No!
And human beings are nice, Francisco.
I know they are, but it's just like, you know, I always think, I kind of just kind of think that, like, you know, these people are all going to be, like, snobby. Oh, I made these games.
They're human beings, man.
Human beings are assholes.
You know.
I assume the worst in people.
Clearly. Man, have some faith in the people that you admire. For their sakes.
I know, I will. I've learned my lesson. But anyway, David
Fox... You have not learned your lesson.
Let me finish my story.
You said something about David Fox. Jesus.
I'm still talking about David Fox. Anyway, David Fox was really cool and very nice, and it was fun to talk to him as well. But unfortunately, I had to run because it was also the Wild Rumpus Party, and at that point, it was getting late in the evening, and we had to go over to the Wild Rumpus Party. So we went to the Wild Rumpus Party, and as usual, it was loud and full of people, and I drank too much, as always. And I got really drunk, and I don't remember I don't really remember getting home, but I got back to the hotel all right, and I was hungover the next day. But at the Wild Rumpus Party, I saw Greg Rice, who I wanted to thank for being so nice and being supportive when I sent him the build of a golden wake.
That's so unusual.
But I couldn't... what?
Because that's so unusual in human beings that they're so nice.
I didn't say... No, but I mean, he didn't have to do that. I'm just some guy sending him a build of my game, and he actually responded to me and you know, said he would check it out. I mean, I'm sure he... I don't know if he did or not, but, you know, at least he...
I'm sorry I never played it because it's a big wah-wah.
Listen! Let me finish my goddamn story without my... fuck off. God damn it. Just wait until we get to the bit on Friday. You're going to... Anyway.
I know, it's fine. I'm just winding you up because it's fun.
You're winding me up because... Okay, keep winding me up because... Yeah, never mind. Anyway. So anyway, at the Wild Rumpus Party...
You know, can I just interrupt you again for like a millionth time?
What else
something? I wonder
what?
If like, if David Fox had, like, when the What Does the Fox Say come out thing, I wonder if... if he hates that song because people like just constantly coming up to him just...
Going ring ding 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 ding
like,
ding
ding ding ding ding. Anyway, sorry. I had to go there.
Oh my god. Anyway, yeah, you did.
Imagine if you talk to him like, "Hi, David Fox," and he just said that to you. That would be the best thing if, like, he made it his last work to go around just saying that to people constantly.
Yeah, that would be. Maybe next year. I'll tell. Yeah, so I don't have any memorable, really, stories from the Wild Rumpus Party because I don't remember most of it. But anyway, so then the next day, Thursday, was kind of a quiet day. Had some more interviews. I talked to John Walker from Rock, Paper, Shotgun on Wednesday along with Dave. And John Walker's a really nice guy.
I'm not even going to comment. I'm done.
Well, I mean, look, at a lot of people think that John Walker is not a nice guy because of the things he says and about things on Rock, Paper, Shotgun and the fact that he, you know, was mean to Peter Molyneux. But he's genuinely a nice...
Well, I think...
Us cookies! He stole cookies from the press room to give to me and Dave. How nice is that?
I gotta say, John Walker's always been really, really nice to me. I saw the interview that he did with Peter Molyneux. I thought... I'm not gonna talk about it.
Okay, let's,
yeah.
Let's not. Okay. Let's move on.
John Walker has always been very nice to me.
Okay, good. Well, he was very nice to me, and he's very nice. Anyway, it's Thursday. What happened on Thursday? Not much happened on Thursday. I had interviews, and I didn't really... We were looking for karaoke, but there was no karaoke. Naughty Dog was supposed to be having karaoke, but instead they were having Mario-ky, which is the terrible video game karaoke shit that you had to pay to get in, and I said, no, thank you.
Well, to be disappointed by Naughty Dog isn't really a surprise at this point in my life.
No. Naughty Dog had their karaoke, but it was last night instead of Thursday night, unfortunately. Oh. So anyway. So we went to this Russian-themed bar called Soda Popinski's, which was pretty cool. We being me and Jess, and we actually went to dinner at this Vietnamese place with the guys who did Killer Queen, Nick Mikros and Josh DeBonis and others. But they're local New Yorkers. Man, that was another thing. I ran into, like, every single person I know from New York up there, over in San Francisco. I was like,
Are they game developers?
Yeah. When I say every single person I know in New York is a game developer, basically.
It kind of makes sense that they'd be at GDC then.
Well, yeah, but the thing was, like, I was just like, man, the majority of people here are New York people. We should have GDC in New York so we don't have to travel because we're lazy.
That is incredibly self.
I know.
Continue.
Anyway. so then we come
Are you putting off mentioning Friday because it's going to be dramatic, or are you just like,
No, I'm ready. I'm ready now. Okay. I'm ready to talk about Friday now.
Do you need a hug?
No, not now. Anyway, maybe later when I get into it.
Okay.
So Friday was a talk that I was really anticipating and really exciting for, and I stole Jess's All Access Pass to go to because it was really it was really the only talk I wanted to see, and that was a classic postmortem on Loom given by Brian Moriarty.
Now, Loom is like 25.
Loom is 25. In fact...
Exactly.
Exactly on the day, Brian Moriarty pointed out that on March 6th, which was yesterday, which was the day he gave the talk, he handed in four or five floppy disks to LucasArts, and that was Loom. So he finished Loom 25 years ago to yesterday, which is pretty amazing. And he said,
"Yeah,
funny how I managed to arrange that," which got a laugh from the crowd. Brian Moriarty is a very good speaker. He prepares all his stuff. He reads off of an iPad, but it still sounds genuine. It doesn't sound like he's reading or anything, but he's really entertaining to listen to speak. And, of course, he is a professor, so he opened up by saying, "I am, in fact, Professor Moriarty," which was also clever. He does a really good job of mixing up...
Like, I'm sure he gets that so much, I gotta be honest.
I'm sure he got it so much that he completely embraces it, because he followed me on Twitter, and his Twitter handle is at Prof. B. Moriarty, so he definitely... I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. So, the talk was really... quite interesting. I mean, he basically it was a postmortem, so he basically talked about the plot of the game and the idea of the game, and he spoiled the game, and he talked about some really interesting points. He mentioned Steve Purcell and how twisted a man he is, and what a twisted genius he is.
I love Steve Purcell's work so... Well, I mean, you only have to look at Sam and Max and Steve Purcell's twisted as hell.
Yeah, and Steve Purcell did several animations, of course, including Chaos, and the infamous animation of Bishop Mandible dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he told a great little story about how he said, well, we need the bishop to die, and Steve Purcell was like, okay, and he left for the night and came back the next morning and saw that, like, all the people were, like, all the team were just, like, standing crowded around the computer, and he's like, what's going on? Did he kill Mandible? And they're like, yeah, he killed Mandible, watch. And he watched it, and he was like, his jaw dropped, and he was like, how did he do that? I still don't know how he did it. And it's a great animation. It's easily the best
animation
in the whole game.
I gotta say, like, as someone that does animations...
Yeah.
I gotta say, as someone that does animations, animating a death is, like, the most fun in my year.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
It's, like, the best part of my life.
Absolutely.
Is, like, killing someone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he told a lot of interesting anecdotes, including the fact that... I tweeted a lot of the slides that he showed because he opened up by showing the classic, you know, the opening of The Secret of Monkey Island, and everyone cheered, and he was like, I think you all know what's coming next, and of course everyone laughed, and so he did the whole He went and talked to the pirate about Loom, our friend Anatoly Boyoyoying.
The pirate. His name is Cobb.
His name is Cobb. Yes, just like the Jesus. Character in Loom,
who looks exactly the
who
same.
Who looks exactly the same. And he mentioned who it was that named Cobb. He said, "We need to name this guy." And someone said, without missing a beat, "Just call him Cobb." And he said, "Yeah, that's perfect." But I don't remember who it was that suggested it.
Okay.
But he showed a whole bunch of pictures, like from the early days of them at Skywalker Ranch, and how he got the job because he used to work for Infocom. And and how LucasArts yep. reached out to him, and or Lucasfilm at the time, and it looked like they were having a lot of fun back in those days. Like, it was really interesting to see the pictures of like young Ron Gilbert and Eric Wilmunder and Brian Moriarty and everyone else at LucasArts in their like amazing ranch offices. And they only had two mandates, which were don't embarrass George. And don't spend too much money, or something like that. So it was.
That's fair.
Yeah, it was fair. So yeah, it was a really interesting talk. And then, but what was really interesting about it, and what it was honestly, it was a pretty emotional talk. Because
yeah, you said you got pretty like you said Brian got pretty emotional and like,
he
yeah.
did he did he told the story of how he had come up with the idea for Loom, and it was. It was interesting because it was actually from a magazine ad for a circuit board.
And yeah, I was reading about this just before.
Yeah, were you reading the write up on PC Gamer?
Maybe.
Yeah, I saw there was a write up on PC Gamer. But yeah, it was described as a loom, and when he heard the word, something just clicked, and he knew, like, the story, and. It was just in his head and everything, and he just like furiously wrote it all out, and it just was one of those moments of complete creative inspiration. And as he was talking about that, he kind of like got choked up in remembering, and it just was so apparent that like he was so passionate about this game, and you know, as a designer and as a creative person, I'm, you know, I could appreciate that, and I'm sure you can appreciate it too, just like how sometimes it's just, you know, so...
Yeah.
It just flows out of you, and it just seems... Yeah. And despite all, like, the ups and downs and the hardships of making games and everything, in the end, it's just, like, it's so gratifying to do it. And it's just, yeah. And it's great to have something that you can feel proud about and feel good about. And he definitely does still like Loom. He said, you know, I played Loom for the first time... and I don't know how long, and he said, I have the luxury of my failing memory, not, you know, to me it was kind of like I was playing a game that I made, but almost like someone else made, and
yeah,
it doesn't suck, he said.
Yeah.
Which was
I
great.
Think, like, one thing interesting about, like, the getting struck by something and that moment of inspiration where everything falls into place, I think sometimes... You have all of these ideas and experiences and sort of concepts floating around your head, but you're not doing anything with them.
Yeah.
And, like, suddenly one thing clicks into place and all these little elements, rather than, like, a magic idea just appearing in your head, all these elements that you've had just kind of finally gel together into something cohesive, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, on a personal level, it really also struck a chord. I tweeted about this, too, just because, like, you know, Loom was an experimental thing back in those days, because I mean obviously it didn't have inventory, it was trying to be designed as a game that was going to be completed, you know, it was about the story. He didn't want people to get stuck and frustrated and turn it off and never,
especially never coming from like the Infocom games where, like, you know,
and the Sierra games
get
of
stuck.
The time the Sierra games of the time where you would have to call the hint line and whatever.
Yeah, nobody finished well.
Yeah,
you know, anyway.
So, like, you know, it was a big risk for LucasArts, and it was, you know, his passion project, and that's kind of how I felt about A Golden Wake, you know. I felt it was a risky project that, you know, was kind of different. And the other thing he talked about, too, was about how he was, at Infocom, he had always done his own text adventures, and he had always been in control and done everything himself. And then he had to learn to, like, work on a team, which is what I'm pretty much going through right now as well. So I was like, I hear you, Brian. I know exactly what you're saying. And so at the end of the talk, I mean, I'm sure everyone who reads Twitter by now has, or who reads the internet at all, has has already heard, but I'll give it to you straight from the horse's mouth. He started playing the ending of Loom, and he said, "Well, this part is unscripted. I'm just going to talk about, you know, what I remember and how I feel about it and whatever." So he showed the bit at the end where Bobbin turns himself into a swan, and he's like, "You know, it was really interesting for me too, because I said to the animators, I want you to show these swans flying away, and they grab the fabric of reality in their beaks and pull it away. How are you? How in the world are they going to do that?" And they did it. Watch. And so we watched it in the original EGA, which still looks beautiful to this day. He also talked about dithering and how, like, this was the first game they developed the technique of EGA dithering for this game. And it still holds up amazingly today. And the 16-color EGA version is definitely still, like, one of the most beautiful EGA games I've ever seen. And it's just really, really nice. And so, yeah, we watched the scene, and he was talking over it. And then, of course, he said that he really wishes that he had pursued the sequels a lot further, because, of course, he planned it as a trilogy, apparently, with Forge and Fold.
Yep.
And so he said that he really felt privileged and that he had had a great opportunity that he didn't think he would ever be able to top or repeat again, but that if there were to be sequels to Loom, there were only three studios that he would trust to do it justice, and he said those three studios were Telltale, Double Fine, and Wajid Eye. At which point I went, wow! And I was sitting next to Emily Morganti. And he said, "So talk to me." And
who for those people that don't know, Emily is kind of our PR
Emily
person.
is our PR person, as well as PR person for a few other people. But she is primarily Wajid Eye PR. So we looked at each other and said, "We need to go talk to him." At which point, he got a standing ovation, a much well deserved standing ovation. I went to text Dave and I said, "Screw this, I'm calling Dave." I called Dave, but he didn't answer, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I texted him and he responded after a while. So we went
and
up.
Dave, it should be pointed out that Dave loves Loom and that that I think, is it Wishbringer? I haven't played it, but
Wishbringer, he always mentions Wishbringer as one of his favorite Infocom games, which was designed by Brian Moriarty.
One of his first adventure games.
One of
I
his
think.
First, yes, actually. Yeah,
I think.
I think he cites that as, like, his mom bought him a copy of Wishbringer, and that's what got him into adventure games.
So.
Yeah. So
big moment for Dave.
Big moment for Dave, yes, which was really, really nice. And so then we went up to him, and we talked to him, and Emily said to him, "Oh, we're with Wajid Eye." And he said, "Oh, hey, great, nice to meet you." And she gave him his information, and then she introduced me, and I said, "Hi, I'm Francisco." And he said, "Oh, you're the one that made that Southern adventure, right?" And I said, "Yeah, Golden Wake, you know." And he said, "Yeah, I played it, and I really enjoyed it. I play all of Wajid Eye games. I really enjoy them, and I enjoyed that one." And I said, "Really? Well, thank you very much." And so, you know, I told him that Loom was a great experience for me, that because he had talked about how he still gets people telling him that Loom is a great experience, or was, you know, that they played Loom when they were a kid and they still, it got them into the games industry. It's one of the factors that got them into the game industry, and he really likes that, and he feels humbled that people still say that. So I said, "Yeah, I was one of those kids. I had a single-speed external CD-ROM drive, and Loom came bundled with it. And that's how I played it for the first time." He said, "Oh yeah, that's great." So, you know, it was we had a nice little chat, and afterwards I went outside after everything had settled down, and I thought, "Wow, Brian Moriarty played my game and he liked it." And and to just have somebody that you respect and admire tell you that, it is really something.
Yeah, that's like, I think that's like, I have to admit, I was kind of surprised that he plays Wajid Eye games, because, like, I think about how many adventure games that come out now that I miss, because, like, you know, there's only so much you can play. To think, like, someone like that is playing smaller titles, like Wajid Eye titles, is pretty crazy, you know?
Yeah, it was really humbling and really amazing to know that
someone like
Brian Moriarty, and I'm sorry, I'm being an emotional person again.
That's fine.
It seems like such a stupid thing, like, you know, but it means so much that, you know.
Yeah.
Something I found that it it's crazy.
Like, yeah. it's kind of like, I was talking to Dave after the thing, like, you know, because I'm like, I can't talk too much about it, but Dave and I had a thing where somebody, a very big company, had talked to us about doing a project for a very big IP, and, and I was like, this is insane, like, there's no way this is ever going to happen, but, like, for, like, one day of my life, I got to work on, like, a thing that I was like, well, there's no words for it, you know, and there's that moment where you're like, man, how did I get from being, like, an AGS guy that makes, like, a game about like rednecks that get abducted by aliens. So like to where to this, like what the hell happened in that time?
How did I go from making games about a male prostitute and a lady with a giant ass and spaceman in space to having like one of my favorite
early stuff, which was literally Monkey Island fan games with ripped graphics.
How did I go from that to having like the designer of one of my favorite adventure games telling me that he played and liked my game? It's mind blowing.
It's like this little thing, like maybe I am somebody, you know. I don't know. I don't want to get to
Not even that. It's just like maybe it's just like maybe what I do actually has some worth, you know?
That's what I mean. It's very like, reinforcing of, like, hey, maybe I am doing the right thing.
Yeah. So at that point, I was pretty much on cloud nine for the rest of the... After I stopped crying, like I just did now, then I was in cloud nine for the rest of the day. And I thought, man, this is the best GDC ever. What else did I do on Friday, though? Oh, I went to go check out... Go ahead.
I just should point out for the listeners of the podcast, after a few talks and stuff like that, Where Jedi is not going to be doing a sequel to Loom.
Oh, yeah. No, we're totally not.
We should point that out. Do not get excited. I'm sorry, but we are not doing
a sequel. We're not doing a Loom sequel. So, I went to go see Firewatch, which is
the Campus Anthony. Oh, man, that looks so good.
It is. And you know what's even the best thing is that they set up... Yeah, no, it's really cool. But the way they set it up was so amazing. Like, the space that they set up, they rented out this little space, and they set it up so it was like a forest. They put trees, and it smelled like pine, and there was all these, like, forest noises. And they had, Yeah, they had, like, a little ranger table with an actual typewriter that you could type up your... they had little surveys to fill out on what you thought of the game, and like you could use the typewriter, and they had all these fake books from inside the game. They even had a copy of The Accidental Savior, which is the book, if you remember, if you played Gone Home, it's the book that the girl's father in Gone Home wrote about, like a time traveler who tries to prevent the Kennedy assassination or something, or accidentally does it or whatever.
His books in that game, they were ridiculous, but hilarious.
Yeah. But they actually printed out like the cover of The Accidental Savior and put it on the book, which is pretty funny. It was all fake dust jackets on real books, but like they were the books from
In
Firewatch. So it was like really, really well done. But yeah,
say, a very expensive booth to set up.
It wasn't a booth, it was an entire space rented out. Well, it was like an upstairs loft.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I do. But yeah, no, it definitely...
More power to them.
Yeah, no, a lot of effort and care went into that. And yeah, of course, the game itself looks really cool.
I've been watching Firewatch for ages, just because I saw like the color palette that they're using, and I was instantly drawn to it. Like, you cannot see those reds and not go, I need this.
Yeah, so, it's really interesting too, because it's like it's very mundane what the demo shows, but you have this feeling. I wonder, like, there's this feeling like there's going to be more to it, but I don't know what exactly it there is. Like, there's no really like set of expectations there. I don't know. Okay. It's difficult to describe.
I'm really shallow. If I see great art, I want to play it. I know, that's absolutely true, because I want to see how that great art works as a game experience. Like, that's how I am, you know? No, so,
that's
I want it for that reason alone.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, so, there was that, and then went to dinner at Buca di Beppo, which was the most tacky Italian restaurant I've ever been to, and then immediately got on a plane and flew back here, and here I am. So
Hi.
That was my GDC experience in a nutshell.
And you overwrote the Charlotte sauce.
Don't remind me about that, okay? I was trying to be productive and get some work done during the week, and I ended up losing it all because I was a moron who overwrote the source.
It's only like you've only lost like a couple of days' work.
I know. I just have to remember what all the new stuff is because you did a whole bunch of stuff while I was gone.
Yeah, I emailed you about most of it because you were away from Skype. So
yeah, I can reference it all.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem. So anyway. I guess we should probably wrap this up.
I'm curious though, because always interests me every year. You went to GDC, it cost you X amount of money. Obviously you're biased because you got to meet a lot of people that you admire.
Yeah.
But other than that, why would you go to GDC again?
Well, this time around, why would I go again like next year?
Yeah, if you're like, and I realize now we've got interviews, people want to talk about the games and stuff. As a new developer, what worth is there in going to GDC and spending that money? Because this always makes me curious, because it can be very, like, daunting, like, arranging travel and arranging things for anything. So why? Why GDC?
Well, are you saying this, you're asking as a new developer?
As a, you know, like, as somebody that's never been before.
Right, why would they want to? Well,
yeah,
I met Stefan, who's also known as Leaf Thief.
Leaf Thief, yeah.
Yes, this was his first GDC, and I met him and hung out with him a little bit at breakfast, and he seemed to enjoy himself quite a bit. I actually only saw him the one time. I didn't catch him at the end to see what his thoughts about it were. But GDC is definitely, I mean, I spoke with, I don't know if I've talked about him on the podcast, but I know I've mentioned him to you, Jonah Loeb, who's a local New York guy who used to work for Bethesda, but is now indie. So I saw him there, and it was his first GDC, and he was basically telling me that he felt like he didn't really know why he was there, because he felt like, you know, he's just a guy. And I said, but you're working on a game. And he's like, yeah, but we don't really... And I'm like, that's more than most people here. This is the same advice that I got once. Because the first 2 years I went, I was just a freeware developer with no prospects. And then the third year, I had a Golden Wake coming up, but whatever. This year, I finally actually work for Wajidai and, you know, have stuff to talk about. So, as a new developer, it's definitely good to go and sort of get a feel for like the industry stuff and make connections and meet people and just like, you know, talk about stuff. It's essentially, I realize it may seem silly to you to like pay X amount of money.
Well,
I
guess for me, a lot of things, like, I engage quite a lot on Twitter with people.
Yeah,
you know,
you
like,
do, but there's difference between engaging on Twitter and face to face time, you know?
I guess on a personal level, I understand, you know, like friendships and things like that. Mm-hmm. But on a discussion about games level, I really like the open forum format of Twitter where everybody can have a say.
Oh, no, that's like, fine. That's fine. So, it's a good feeling to just be able to be like, oh, look, that's person X who I talk to on Twitter and admire, and, you know, in the games industry, I'm in the same room as them, I'm breathing the same air as them, I'm listening to their voice out loud, you know? There's just something about
that. Because, like, there's a lot of talks and there's a lot of discussions and stuff like that, but it doesn't seem like you've come away, like, from any of them, like, feeling different about design or anything like that.
Me personally?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've picked up some tips and stuff here, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. To tell you the truth, I just go to GDC for the social aspect of it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But I mean, obviously, somebody flying from Europe or something like
that—sure.
That's a prohibitive expense just to go and meet some people, you know.
If you're coming, if you have to pay out of your own pocket, like I said, if you're not being funded or sponsored by your company or whatever, and you have to pay out of your own pocket to come to GDC and just, like, you know, whatever, then maybe, I mean, it depends on what you want to take. I think, like anything, like, you take out of it what you want to take out of it. And I want to take out of it is to meet people and you know, talk about my game and talk about games and just, like, hang out and, you know, have a good time.
Okay. I'd always seen GDC as either a promotional thing because you're going to have a booth there, or an educational thing because you're going to attend the summits. But, like, it feels weird to me to think about it as just, like, going to, like, summer camp with your buddies. But I guess that's how you see it.
That's pretty much exactly what it is. I remember, like, one of the day of Lost Levels, which I never got to go to, actually. We were sitting out in the garden behind the... There's the shopping center thing, and then there's the gardens out in the back between the two north and south halls of Moscone. And Squinky was there with their tuba and playing and attracting the people for the parade to Lost Levels. And I was like, this is like high school. Like, look, those are the art kids. Those are the theater kids. We're all like, this is like nerd high school. Those are like that kind of thing of social group. It's like, I mean, but everyone mingles. It's not like they're cliquey or anything like that. But it's just, yeah, it's just kind of like you're hanging out with your buddies and meeting people and, like, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's just a nice time. I always enjoy it. I'll be back.
Yeah,
next
I was
year.
Just curious. I was just curious to, like, you know, GDC is not promoted as that sort of thing.
Right, yeah.
It's promoted as a professional event, but.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is because the expo, you know, you have all the big corporate, all the big brands, and you have, like, Oculus, and you have Microsoft, and you have everything, and whatever. But outside of that, outside of the halls and the expo floors and stuff, you know, you have other stuff. And I mean, they talk about, like, social issues too. There was one talk that was, I think, called The Empty Chair, where they just had, like, an empty chair on stage in silence, and then behind it they were projecting quotes from different developers who had either not come to GDC because they were afraid or just gotten out of the games industry because they were afraid of whatever, and they were putting up their quotes of why. And the people who saw it said that it was really powerful and, like, whatever. So it's not just all, like, this is how you should design games sort of things, you know?
Right. But I'm really interested in this. Like, I see a lot of social issue stuff all the time, and I realize it's a huge thing in gaming. And I don't want to be biased against it because I think it's really important. But for me personally, I'm really interested in the this is how you should design game stuff. I want a university lecture on game design.
You can get that.
I want that talks. Academic discussion of games, you know?
Yeah, there is that as well.
Yeah, but that's right. That's what I'm interested in. Like,
Sure. I one thing I forgot to mention. Anita Sarkeesian was there. I saw Anita Sarkeesian. She is so small. It's hilarious. She's like 2 feet tall. She's tiny.
And that's coming from you.
I know! I'm not exaggerating when I say she has to be at least, like, 4'8" or something. She is small. Okay. And it's so funny because, like, she has a very commanding presence. So I thought she was going to be, like, this tall lady, but no, she's tiny. Also, I saw Erin Robinson a couple of times, and she gave me a hug, and I said, congratulations on Gravity Ghost. And she said,
I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, and she said, I didn't know you came to these things. And I was like, yep, I've been here for 4 years. And she was like, oh.
Yeah, I've heard Gravity Ghost is very, very good.
Yeah, good.
So, good.
Good.
I asked somebody, my favorite Erin Robinson game that I've played is still Spooks, I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I love Spooks a bit, so I asked somebody if it's better than Spooks, and they're like, I'm not sure yet.
So, good.
Yeah, but no, I think it kind of feels like to me, like, she's gone back to, like, what she started with Spooks, that kind of idea, and, like, getting away from, like, making puzzle games.
Yeah.
Not that Spooks didn't have puzzles.
Yeah,
Anyway.
Anyway. All right, well, good. I'm going to sleep for, like, 1,000 years now, so hopefully that'll be I'll be awake in time for next week's podcast, and hopefully
so look for episode 69 year 3015.
You should probably play The Last of Us before then.
I want
yeah, and you want to play The Last of Us.
I actually want to play, this is really sad, I never thought I'd play this, but I actually want to play more Sierra Adventure games.
Wow, what have you become?
I know. I don't know. I don't know who I am. In your absence. Oh, no, because you were here when I was playing. And see, Torrent's Passage. Yeah. After playing Torrent's Passage, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to play more Sierra Adventure games.
Well,
like,
you played a good one in the interim, even though I was...
Yeah, but after Conquest of Camelot, I'm like, I'm really excited about, like, EGA-era Sierra Adventure games.
Ooh, that's a pretty small pool, and there's not really very
many
good
ones. No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It's got King's Quest 1 through 4.
No, but King's Quest 1 through 3 are AGI adventure games.
If I said EGA.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking like SCI EGA specifically.
No, I said EGA.
Okay.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, you've played pretty much all the good ones, if I'm being honest.
I haven't played any of the Space Quest except for like a tiny portion of Space Quest 2, which had me dying constantly.
I don't think you're going to like Space Quest, to be honest.
We'll see.
But that's neither here nor there. Let's not talk about this on the podcast. We'll see.
I'm a surprising person, I'll have you know.
You're a really nice person.
Thank you.
Bye.